Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spungin. On today's show... A little under 2 weeks ago, a prominent Palestinian activist died shortly after he was violently arrested in a nighttime raid by the Palestinian Authority's Preventative Security Force. Since then, there have been unprecedented protests against the regime, with marchers calling for the resignation of long-term Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Joining me today to discuss the unrest in the West Bank, I'm delighted to welcome back to the pod Amira Haas. Thanks for being here. Amira, how are you?
Thank you and good morning.
Amira, who was Nizar Banat and why has his death sparked protests?
Nizar Banat is a resident of Doura, the city of Doura in South West Bank, and he has been a critic of the Palestinian Authority since many years, over Facebook, over other social media, in demonstrations. He has been arrested by the Palestinian authorities more than 20 times, if I remember correctly. Was released on and off and never tired of criticizing them. He was arrested on the 24th of June this year, beaten savagely by the security personnel of the Palestinian Amman Wakai, the preventative security, and he died within an hour after he was arrested. He was arrested in the home, not in his own home, in Doura. He left the home a month or so before because his house in Doura, where his family lives and his young children live, was attacked one time at the beginning of May by shots, and it's an area which is the presence of the Palestinian security forces is heavy. It's nearby the Palestinian court there. So the assumption was that he was warned by somebody who is either in the PA or close to the PA or part of Fatah or things like that. And he left and stayed with his relatives who live in H2 in Hebron, in the area which is under Israeli security, full security control. So Palestinian security needs Israeli permission and coordination in order to enter there with armed forces. As we know, they entered not in their military official jeeps, but they entered, the Palestinian security entered with civilian cars, probably four, but they had guns, but short guns.
Were they uniformed?
No, they were not uniformed. Some of them had the sign of preventative security. So I checked whether it was by Israeli knowledge and permission. So far, it seems it was. Because the risk of having such a heavy, you know, a group of 20 or 25 people who are armed in an area which is under Israeli security is high. The risk is high. So that's why the Palestinian security usually asks for permission.
What kind of things had he been posting on social media that had got the PA so upset?
He's been, for years, he's been talking about nepotism in the Palestinian Authority, corruption, etc. And the last weeks before his murder, he was concentrating on the deal of vaccinations deal that the Palestinian Authority signed with the Israeli side and then withdrew under Palestinian public pressure. And he was shedding doubt about the motivations behind this deal, because the deal was that Israel gives the Palestinians vaccinations that are about to expire in exchange for new vaccinations that Israel will get from Pfizer at the beginning of the next year. So old vaccinations, which is doubtful whether the Palestinian Authority could use them fast enough, in exchange for fresh and good vaccinations for Israel. And of course, most of the Palestinians that I know anyway and that I see in the press doubt the intentions of Palestinian officials and seniors almost about everything.
Did they mean to arrest him? And
they
warn
meant to
him,
arrest
or,
him.
Or
yes.
Was this an assassination?
No, no. I believe that they meant to arrest him, and probably to also to let him have an ordeal of humiliation.
Mm.
I heard from somebody that I think he's a good source, but not from the Palestinian Security, of course. I heard from him that they prepared kind of a reception for him at the headquarters of the Preventative Security in Hebron, where detainees is undergoing an ordeal of humiliation. This is what I heard. So they were waiting for him to come, but his death was announced before he entered the premises of the Preventative Security.
Mm. So you believe that it was an accidental death?
Yeah, I think it was. You know, the atmosphere it was really poisonous against him because he was attacking personalities who feel that they aren't untouchable, or that they should be untouchable, that they are so high up in the hierarchy that they shouldn't be criticized. And of course, the implications are that Fatah and the PA and the Palestinian Security Services and many officials who are directly connected and linked either to Israeli security agencies or to American ones, all this entourage and all these circles are being attacked by him and implicated as uninterested in the people's interest and in the people's good. That's the messages that he and his kind are conveying in their posts and open talks. But this is, you know, this is, and then his death, of course, is his murder, which again I don't think it was premeditated. But it was, you know, you think of some people who are interpreting the atmosphere at its worst.
Mm.
And we know it also from Israeli soldiers that there is an atmosphere, a certain atmosphere against Palestinians. They interpret on the ground, or Israeli policemen. So this is not uncommon. And then immediately, as we know, his murder sparked protest all over the West Bank.
Mm.
I think it's less than, I mean, it happened in Hebron, in Bethlehem, in Ramallah several times. Mostly in Ramallah, the protests were violently dispersed by Palestinian security forces and by thugs that are connected, or Palestinian security forces that are dressed as civilians.
Mm. Indeed, the United Nations, which has been monitoring these incidents, expressed concern about these non-uniformed participants, these thugs, as you called them.
Who
is there any sense that they were organized and coordinated with the official Palestinian
forces? For sure. This is, you know, in the Palestinian press, they were called Mistarvim. They're like it's the same logic of using Israeli soldiers disguised as Palestinians to go and actually to provoke something, to create some provocation amidst the Palestinian population. So that's how they were called. They were also called Baltajiye or Baltaje, which is taken from Egypt. And this is a phenomenon that we experienced or we witnessed in Cairo, in Egypt, in 2011, that some civil-dressed people who were later known as connected to the security services entered in order to create havoc among the protesters. And this is what happened here. And not the first time. I myself witnessed it several times in demonstrations in Ramallah. But this time the protest continues, keeps continuing. Now they are, I heard this morning that Jibril Rajoub apologized to journalists who have been attacked by those civilians during the demonstrations. At the same time, he continued the line that some Fatah officials started with from the beginning, that it is a foreign agenda that leads the protesters, and that they are attacking Fatah, and with it they are attacking the national project.
Mm. Presumably they're also funded by the New Israel Fund, Israeli left.
No, but
who are these protesters? Are they secularists? Are they? Are there any Hamas members protesting against Fatah?
In the two that I was there, I mean, it was mostly leftists, but I know that there are that there were some in other protests. There were also some people closer to Hamas and some Fatah people who were even there. Some Fatah members in Halil in Hebron. It was wider because it is the area where Nizar is from. By the way, Nizar is from a refugee family from Ashur originally. So it's not a big hamula in Dura or in Hebron, but there is a sense of, you know, this local Palestinian local patriotism. So there, the big families of South West Bank, Hebron area, protested against against his killing. Yeah,
It would be fair to say, though, that Banat's murder or death or manslaughter or whatever we're going to call it, isn't the only reason that Palestinians are protesting now, right?
Look, Nizar was not a fan of the Israeli occupation, if some people drew the wrong conclusions. He was an ardent critic of the Israeli occupation and the Israeli regime, and he has been advocating for years for the establishment of one state, Palestinian state, between the river and the sea. Mm-hmm. So the core of the problem is that Palestinians are under Israeli military occupation for so long that did not allow, in spite of the negotiations, the Oslo negotiations, did not allow the Palestinian Authority or PLO to materialize the dream of a state beside Israel. So if Fatah is losing so much in the eyes of the Palestinian people, it's because it had a promise and it did not deliver, not because it did not want this or it acted against it, but because Israel did everything possible to foil the possibility of establishing a Palestinian state aside Israel. So we cannot separate the two issues. And we cannot just regard the Palestinian Authority as an independent regime, as if we were analyzing Burma or China or something that we have nothing to do. Mm. We as Israelis and as a whole Israeli Jews, we have direct connection and link to this problem of lack of Palestinian democracy. It is very much to do because the Palestinian Authority is committed to securing some pacification or rest or the status quo of a seeming status quo of stability in the area. So when Fatah and its security agencies are being criticized by Palestinians, the situation is very shaky. It can easily be translated to clashes with Israel and with the Israeli army. Mm. So this is the role of Fatah to prevent this from happening. That's why it is also connected one with the other.
Mm. And the Palestinian Authority and its security agencies feel that they can act with impunity within the West Bank because Israel keeps saying that it needs to prop up Abbas?
Israel does not prop up Abbas. This is maybe one of the issues that have been manifested during the last 15 or 10 years. Everything that Israel did in order to ridicule Abbas, it did. Mm. Issues which are very simple. I'll give you an example. I know that you want to talk about it later, but the issue of family reunification. Mm. Now, we are talking today about family reunification in Israel, which is the allowing Palestinians who are from the West Bank to live with their families in Israel proper. But I'm talking now about family reunification of Palestinians within the West Bank and even Gaza. Imagine that there are thousands of families, thousands of Palestinian families, where one of the spouses does not have a Palestinian ID, either because this spouse, usually women, are foreigners. I mean, they're always foreigners, but most of them are from Palestinian families who lost their status of residency. Mm. Now, Israel could, according to Oslo, every year 5,000 families should have received this family reunification. But Israel stopped the process in 2000. So imagine how many families have accumulated who are deprived of this basic human right of living together in one's own house. So while Israel is rejecting this right, is denying Palestinians this right to live together in your own home in stability and security and safety, then what the message is that Abbas did not deliver. Mm. People don't say Israel did not deliver. People say Fatah and Abbas did not deliver. So Israel has not done things in order to bolster Abbas' position or to keep him secure or safe vis-a-vis his people. But of course, Abbas and the PA have their own, their conduct and their policies, it's true, should be seen in light of the Israeli occupation. But also some of the things are sui generis, are a result or an outcome of their own perceptions of an authority or a government or how to deal with the people. And this is my, as an Israeli Jewish journalist living among Palestinians, I'm always torn between these two. When I think the Palestinian repression is stemming directly from Israeli pressure and Israeli diktat, and when it is something that comes from traditions, from undemocratic traditions that they have probably absorbed over the years, and not to do with Israel, it's very difficult. It's the borderline is very thin.
And one of the issues that has been sparking unrest was the cancellation of the Palestinian elections.
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible to have a democratic election under occupation?
An excellent question, and of course not, because as we saw in 2006, the moment Hamas runs in the elections, or any Palestinian party that would not accept Oslo, for example, as the basis, or would advocate for a one-state solution, let's say, he'll be harassed by Israel. And all these parties their programs, their political programs and platforms were careful. They did not use incitement. They were within a certain international framework of political program. So of course you cannot. But at the same time, it is impossible to develop Palestinian political life without elections, and that's why people were pushing for it. And you know what? One of the things that we forget, we always talk about Palestinian national struggle vis-a-vis the Israeli occupation. But the national struggle was also a democratic struggle par excellence. Because when you're not allowed together, when you're not to organize, when you're not allowed to learn what you want, when you're not allowed to learn your own history, when you're not allowed to demonstrate, and Palestinians are not allowed to demonstrate till today, so this is a struggle. When you struggle for this, and when you go to prison for this, you struggle for democracy. So the level of the appreciation of democracy and the experience of struggle for democracy is very deep within the Palestinian people. And there is big tension. That's why there is such a big tension between them and their leaderships. Leaderships that have mostly come from the outside and from Arab states, where the experience of democracy was and the fight for democracy was poorer.
Can the PA even afford to take the risk of elections? I mean, there's talk that if they were to hold an election, that Israel might allow voters in East Jerusalem to take part. Would that make a difference?
No, the issue is not about Israel allowing. I mean, the PA could have used the elections to defy Israel in Jerusalem. And many of the Palestinian parties and public wanted this to happen. So in East Jerusalem, Israel, according to Oslo, Israel has to allow elections to happen. And okay, with all sorts of restrictions, but it is possible. And why should the Palestinians wait for Israel's consent? This is shame. I mean, this is the occupier. You do not expect the occupier to give you something. You force the occupier. This is civil disobedience that they should have done.
As Pete Seeger said, take it easy, but take it.
Okay, you know better. Yeah. It's not easy. It's take it hard, but take it. Yes, not easy at all.
So the main issue with cancelling the elections was fear of Hamas's success?
No, I don't think so.
So what
it was more about? No, Hamas would have there were several lists within the who were running for elections who were actually close to Fatah or stemming out of Fatah, but critical of the authoritarian face of the authoritarian phase of Fatah and the PLO
and the personnel.
Yes, so it was more likely that there could have been that Abbas would not. It would have been clear that Fatah and Abbas are not a major force anymore, or cannot be a major force. But not necessarily that Hamas would have received most of the votes. Not at all.
Mm. So Fatah's grip on power is that strong that it would cancel elections rather than allow even a small splinter party to come in.
Fatah, yes, and. Look, it's a catch-22 because the Oslo, this perpetuation of a situation that should have been only temporary, which means Palestinian limited government, limited self-rule within the enclaves that nobody among Palestinians thought that this would be the rule. But within Palestinian enclaves, it is an undesired situation that in order to maintain it, you need to show this authoritarian, to rule but with authoritarianism. Mm. Also because if you don't, you actually break your promises to the Israeli occupation. The promises to keep the security. But how long can you keep the security? It was meant for 4 or 5 years. To have this situation of still occupation, but the Palestinian Authority is the kind of the bulwark and the partition between the occupier and the occupied. But this was supposed to be for 4 years only.
Mm.
And by then, Palestinians should have had a state of their own where they can exercise when they have the independence that they don't have. And the lack of independence that is reflected in the permanent Israeli theft of Palestinian land, ongoing theft of Palestinian land, which makes the idea of a contiguous state ridiculous, the refusal to allow Palestinians to move from one area to the other. Gazans are not allowed to move to the West Bank or to visit or to go and work in the West Bank and then commute in the evening and go back to Gaza. Or West Bankers cannot go to Jerusalem. So you have all these prohibitions of a military occupation that the Palestinian Authority unhappily has to respect.
Because it doesn't have a choice.
Because it is still bound by the Oslo Accords, that the positive essence of this accord, which was to allow Palestinians to reach the independence within 5 years, have gone completely. So what's left of these accords is that the Palestinians are kind of a security subcontractors of Israeli army and Israeli Shin Bet, Israeli intelligence forces.
Mm. And there were also reports that Israel arrested Farid al-Atrash, a Palestinian human rights lawyer, who was returning from one of those protests against the PA in Ramallah. So is this
I just wrote example? About it for my tomorrow's article, op-ed, yes, about Farid al-Atrash. Exactly. We don't know. His friends suspected the Palestinian Authority asked Israel to arrest him. I personally doubt it. But he was arrested and he is interrogated and questioned about his participation in a demonstration in Bethlehem in June 15th.
Against the Palestinians?
No, against the attack on Gaza, the recent attack on Gaza. So he participated in a demonstration in Bethlehem. Bethlehem, as far as I know, is a Palestinian city. He is 44. He is a lawyer. He is not the person who would go, I don't know. I mean, he is being asked about the participation in demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
Every Palestinian demonstration is illegal according to the Israeli military orders.
Even so peaceful.
So he participated in a so-called illegal demonstration.
Mm. Our colleague Jackie Khoury reports in today's newspaper that Ramallah is preparing to make some personnel changes in response to some of these protests. Some say that Salam Fayyad, the former prime minister, is set to make a comeback. Will that placate the protesters or will it just shuffle more Fatah cronies into positions of power?
I already read that Salam Fayyad denied this, or that he was going, and you know, there are talks about such personnel changes that I never know if it is in order to pacify the mood or the atmosphere for some time, and then everything is as normal. I know more that there are talks about change of personnel in the in Hebron area, people who were behind the arrest of Nizar Banat. I know that 14 people were arrested by the Palestinian military prosecution, and those who were involved in the killing, probably, or as a suspect of being involved in the killing of Banat.
Mm.
The demands are, there is a group now, an initiative of some ex-prisoners, Palestinian ex-prisoners, both from different groups, from different backgrounds, who try to prevent or to neutralize the internal hostility that has developed over the past 10 days, or almost 2 weeks. And some of the suggestions are indeed replacement of personnel. But it's not radical, it doesn't go to the root of the problem.
Mm. During these protests, Amira, we've seen a repeat of some disturbing phenomenon, the targeting of women and female journalists. As you wrote, many women reported being sexually harassed at the demonstrations, having their mobile phones confiscated, and reported being summoned by the Palestinian security forces. Is that a deliberate tactic?
Yeah. This is probably some of the deliberate aspects of the repression of the demonstrations, and in order to show that there are many women there and the women are permissive, or they have a tendency to be permissive, or things like that, you know, like this looked. But again, it was very impressive how quick some of those journalists gathered, and they had a press conference in the offices of El Haq to speak about it in the open. Not if women who felt more of direct sexual harassment normally are more shy to talk about this, but the verbal harassment was very, very clear, and they immediately spoke about it. It was repudiated by several groups, including a coalition of Palestinian organizations against violence against women. So the public is immediately involved in this criticism to what has been happening.
Mm.
So it is more lively, you know, we think of, you know, like we say, an authoritarian regime. But there is a lot of talk and rejection and opposition and out loud criticism. And then I know that some of those people in Palestinian human rights organizations have direct talked with some of the officials. Either they initiate, but their phones are being accepted, or that the officials themselves initiate calls to those activists of human rights organizations, asking or taking their advice, asking for their advice. So it is not an ossified society.
Mm.
It is very lively the way that these problems are being addressed. And in a way, Fatah, the way it reacted to the demonstrations and the criticism should alarm many of its members, of course, because it shows that this is the ossified party. This is the party that is afraid of the free thought and the consciousness that is so typical of the new generations.
Mm. Is that new generation, that more liberal thinking, open-minded generation, in the ascendancy, or do Abbas and his ilk still have their knees on the neck of that generation, so to speak?
No, so that's exactly the contradiction, that the people who are officially representing the people are outdated, so to say. And they don't even understand the revolution that the social media has entered Palestinian life. You know, they have people like, as we know, the those young generations of activists in Jerusalem that made the issue of Sheikh Jarrah known the world over.
Mm.
I mean, Sheikh Jarrah is an issue that there have been demonstrations around it for 15, 16 years. But somehow with there are new generations that know how to appeal and to explain the issue. in several languages and to the whole world.
And on social media.
Exactly, mm-hmm. and especially on social mm-hmm. media mm. and in other ways. So, like, I wouldn't use the term liberal. I think it's too dwarfing the vehemence, the fire that is in the hearts of those activists.
Mm.
And the fire also against Israeli domination over their life, not only of about the Palestinian Authority.
Mm. So are there echoes of the Arab Spring in any of these protests? Is this the start of an internal intifada, perhaps?
Again, it's never disconnected. But also in the Arab Spring of 2011, many people said that the Arab Spring follows the Palestinian intifadas. So again, when it comes to Palestinian struggles for democracy, again, I would say the Palestinian fight against Israeli occupation was also a fight for democracy, not just for national liberation. It is a fight for democratic values as well, and values as equality, values as human dignity. So the Palestinians experience it in their daily life, or they know this is part of the inheritance, part of the tradition. And the tragedy is that their representatives now are chaining themselves and chain their people with these authoritarian methods that are necessary in order to keep their promise for the Israelis in the expired Oslo Accords. Mm. This is the tragedy. The tragedy is that Palestinians are their relative stage of stability within the enclaves, which by itself is a violation of what was behind the idea of the two-state solution. So the relative stability that they experience in the enclaves comes at the price of an internal authoritarian regime that serves the security demands of Israel.
Mm. Like a snake feeding itself or eating its own tail. Amira, before I let you go, there's a big vote coming up today in the Knesset with the so-called family reunification law coming up for renewal. We discussed this a little earlier. Are you hopeful that this law, which the Haaretz editorial this morning called a stain on the law book, will be rescinded? And will it make any difference?
You know, the competition over the stains of what stain is the biggest one or the big is very difficult because so many stains that I don't think that, I mean, the unstained parts are in the minority. No, I'm not, because this is, if not the majority of this coalition is in favor of this law, which is actually a temporary law, which has been extended for almost 20 years already.
Mm.
The right wing in opposition is in favor of this law. They will not vote for it for pragmatic political reasons today in order to embarrass the government. And then there is a fear that if this temporary law fails, then Shaked, the Minister of Interior, right wing Minister of Interior, will formulate a new law with the opposition, which will be as harsh or harsher.
Mm.
Against the possibility of Palestinian families to live together in Israel.
Mm. Amira, I'm afraid we're out of time. Thank you so
as
much
always,
for your time. It's
thank
been
you, Simon.
Fascinating as always.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you.
My thanks to Amira Haas and to our producer, Aaron Ehrlich. We'll be back again soon. Until then, shalom from Tel Aviv.